guys. It's time for a new episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast. This is Mark.
This is Matt. I see what you did there.
Yeah. Why? What did I do?
I don't know if... I don't want to jump the gun, Mark. You know, it's like the person that usually jumps the gun isn't here right now, so...
Yeah, there's no jumping the gun with no Frank today.
Yes.
There might not be a Frank for a while.
Yeah.
There's a mutual parting of the ways right now. That's all we'll say about that.
It's kind of like whenever he saw, enter the Jedi.
The last Jedi.
Yeah, he's seen his shadow, and he has gone back for at least 6 weeks.
Yeah, I saw his attempt on Facebook to try to troll Last Jedi fans the other day.
Yeah.
You know how Facebook will pop up that someone you know liked something or commented and every now and then. I was like, and I didn't say anything back. That was nice. I really wanted to troll him right back.
I was expecting like a big screenshot of how you like just dismantled him. He's like talking about the fashion or something. It's something about the fashion of the characters.
Episode 9 leaked photos. Yeah. And I was just like, whatever, man. Like,
you know what? I was like, it doesn't fit the cutout of a board game, and now he's talking about fashion. So how do you even understand intergalactic fashion? It's like watching Back to the Future 2. we don't really dress that way. It's like we have no, I don't know if we can comment on fashion. I mean, it's Jedi tunics and stuff. It's like future stuff. I don't know. They're absolutes. They are what they are.
And he's a fashion mogul. You know, he wears shorts and t-shirts.
Yeah.
But no, it's not really jumping the gun, because we do advertise on our social media the movie we're doing each episode.
That's right.
We're going to talk to Goonies today, and so I had to start out the show with that little famous line from that movie. And welcome to anyone. This will be like our third or fourth week now. We are on Ironic Radio and WBLZmedia.com. We're on there every Wednesday from 2 to 4 o'clock Central. So thanks for anyone listening on the radio stream. And you can find all our episodes at therebelradiopodcast.com. So how's your week been?
Oh, so far so good. I played some retro games. I watched some really bad horror movies.
Well, you took another week off, man. Yeah. It seems like you're always on vacation.
That's what my coworkers have told me. Yeah, they're like, man, I wish I got all the vacation you got. And I was like, you have to have a baby, and then the company will give you 6 weeks paid off. I was like, that's a very expensive vacation that you have to pay for.
At the end of the day.
Yeah. So it's like, I had like 4 weeks off, and then, I started taking vacation in June, a few days off here and there, and then I took 1 week at the beginning of August, and then I took came back to work, and then I took a vacation the next week. They're like, you can't take 2 weeks off. Well, it's not 2 weeks if you come back for a few days. So I did that. And now I'm going to start where I have weekends off. So that'll free up the other, little days here and there that I had to schedule. So now I can have like another week somewhere. I'm going to annoy them again with my other days of vacation.
must be nice. I mean, I can't complain. I get 5 weeks vacation.
Yeah.
So I get a lot too, but I don't take them like all in a row like you seem to do.
Yeah. I knew this was my only year to have a lot of vacation because I took 2 weeks of the paternity leave last year and I saved 4 for this year. So I was like, this is going to be my only year when I have 7 weeks of vacation. I was like, when am I ever going to have 7 weeks of vacation?
Like when you're 50, maybe.
Yeah, dude, when you're 50 and they give you a friggin' Rolex.
You can't even really walk half the time of your vacation.
Don't know what you're doing there. You have to be a greeter or something at the front door because you can't work. But
I can't imagine slinging coke at 50 years old.
I know one guy that does it, but I just wonder when it's going to be until he quits. But it's got to be rough. It's got to be rough slinging those cases at that age.
Well, that's good for you on vacation. My week has been hot.
Yeah.
Work and then football practice for my oldest, and it's very, very hot in Texas. We've had heat indexes of like 110 this week, and the boys are out there practicing and giving it their best, and it's just very, very warm.
Yeah, I know we talked before we started recording about me running, and I am going to try and go as early as possible so I don't catch that much sun.
And if we're lucky in about 6 weeks here, we'll have some really good weather.
Yeah, so, hopefully some 75-degree days.
You never know. It could go from being 95 plus to 75 all of a sudden in Texas once you hit early October. So we'll see.
It's one thing they say about Texas. If you don't like the weather, wait 10 minutes.
But other than that, just we're continuing on. We're getting ready for the Fandemic tour, which we're going to be covering. We might only be there one day.
Yeah.
You know, but that's fine. We'll bring some coverage from that. And that's why last week we did the Boondock Saints, because Norman Reedus and Sean Patrick Flannery and David De La Roca are all going to be at the Fandemic tour, signing autographs, taking pictures with people. So it's in Houston, September 14th, 15th, and 16th at NRG Center. So if you're a local listener, go check it out. And Michael Rooker's out there. They just announced Chuck Norris.
Jason David Frank.
Yeah, but he's always at cons.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, he's the Green Ranger, man.
Yes, I'm not a Power Ranger guy. It's before my time. Okay. I'm old, remember?
Well, you know, it was a Saturday morning cartoon. You know, plug in, you know, insert plug here.
Well, kind of, yeah. Hey, you know, so Fandemic Tours in Houston, and we'll bring you coverage of that as it gets closer.
Yes.
So let's kick off the show with Download This, where we talk about what we've downloaded, watched, streamed this week. What have you watched and checked out this week?
This week, I popped, like, my son has hogged the Nintendo DS, so Link is still stuck in the Shadow Temple for me. And so I popped in my NES, and I played some Gunsmoke this week.
That's old school there.
Yeah, man. I love Gunsmoke, and it's, I can never beat the ninjas. It's the ninjas, they come from behind you. It's like first you're...
There were ninjas in Gunsmoke?
Yeah, man. It's the fourth level. It's the fourth level, and it's, so it's right after the Indians. As you go, you fight the Indians, and then it changes things up, because now people don't just come from the front. Now they come from the sides. So, and with the ninjas, they come from behind you too, and you can't turn around and shoot them. So it's like you have to shoot the people in front of you before they shoot at you, so that you can maneuver around, so that the people shooting from behind you don't hit you.
I didn't know that. Yeah. I remember the game. I just didn't know there were ninjas on.
My cousin can beat the game, you know, frontwards and backwards. But yeah. It's always the ninjas. I can't beat the ninjas.
What have I watched? I have watched them. My download this is lately have been kind of weak, but. I watched last night. Actually, we had our fantasy football draft last night, our league.
Yes.
And we had a good time. And not only are we into geek stuff, nerd culture, and comics, we also are sports guys, mostly football and baseball. And we had our fantasy football draft last night. And I got home and I started watching just to wind down a little bit. And I watched some more this morning before the kids were awake. The Power of Grayskull, which is a new documentary that's on Netflix about He-Man and the history of He-Man and everything it's been through. And so far, so good. I'm only about 45 minutes in. It's about an hour and a half, hour and 40 minutes long. And it's actually a really well-thought-out documentary about the story of He-Man and the history. And it goes much more in-depth than the Toys That Made Us episode did. Talks about how they got started and the ideas they had and talking about how it was related to Conan and all that. And it just hit Netflix, I think, on Friday. And it's on there. And it's, so if you're a He-Man fan, check that out.
It's really good
so far. I could be wrong, but I think it was a partially crowdfunded project,
Okay. Which
a lot of documentaries seem to be now. So yeah. they put this together with crowdfunding and they finally put it out. And then I guess Netflix picked it up for streaming. And, I remember the other day we might have done it Sunday afternoon after we recorded. I put the Secret of Nim on for the kids, which is an old, favorite of mine.
Yeah.
A good cartoon back in the 80s and one that was, Disney had actually passed up on that movie because they felt it was too dark, and MGM made it with Don Bluth animation, and it's still a really good film today. Yeah. There's been a lot of talk about a remake of it, based more on the books, the Rats and Nim books, and maybe we'll get one. I could see a nice CGI style remake, or there's some talk of even a live action because of the technology now with the Jungle Book and all that, to do a live action Secret of Nim movie. So
That would be cool to see.
It still holds up, and maybe that's a movie that could show up on this podcast one day. Who knows?
Hey, yeah, who knows? We've only done one animated movie.
Yeah,
so,
and it was an anime. We haven't actually done like a
American
classic family film type deal. But we are doing a family film today.
That's right.
We're ready to get into it. We're doing Richard Donner's The Goonies, which is from 85, right?
85.
Yeah. 85, man. And this is a very, very popular film from the 1980s, which stars a very young Sean Astin, who went on to play Samwise, young Corey Feldman, Josh Brolin in his first role. Those are the main famous actors that are in it. The kid who plays Short Round from Indiana Jones, Temple of the Doom. This was his other big movie after this. He didn't do a whole lot of other stuff after this.
No, he became a stunt director
But it's directed by Richard Donner, who did Superman the movie and went on to make Lethal Weapon and stuff. And produced by Steven Spielberg and Amblin Entertainment.
And the screenplay is by Chris Columbus, who also helped out with Gremlins. And he went on to direct the first two Harry Potter films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chris Columbus was like, he was like a go-to screenwriter back in the 80s. Yeah. He did quite a bit of stuff. And this has been a film that's very, very loved by people, you know, that grew up in the 80s. It's a very talked about movie. There's been rumors of sequels for years to it and everything. And I remember watching it growing up, and this was another one of those. We always talk about those movies you watched on Saturday mornings when cartoons were over and you flipped over to Fox and there was a movie on. The Goonies is one that got a lot of play on HBO or television early mornings, and it seemed like a movie that was just always there that you grew up watching and you just kind of liked because it was a fun adventure movie. And I don't remember the first time I saw it. I was probably a young kid the first time I watched it.
Yeah, I think I was like 8, and I just remember like pirates and then, of course, Sloth.
Yeah.
I remember Sloth, and then I remember the
One-Eyed Willie.
Yeah, and One-Eyed Willie, which I always thought Sloth was One-Eyed Willie growing up for some reason. I guess because, you know, you're a kid and your attention span might not be what it is whenever you're older. So I was always like, oh, that's One-Eyed Willie, but he's got two eyes.
And did you remember liking the film growing up?
Yeah, I liked it because of the kids. You know, the kids are a bunch of buttholes to each other a lot, talk a lot of smack, you know. And, you know, that's what makes you fall in love with the film at first. You know, they have a lot of that banter starting out. And you really get to learn. You know, some people complain about, you know, it takes too long for them to get into the adventure. But, you know, you need that time to set up the camaraderie that these kids have.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I agree. It's a film I think you grew up liking because you relate to these kids as a kid growing up watching. It is a very kid-friendly movie, and the kids talk a little smack to each other.
Yeah.
Maybe not little kid-friendly, but like our oldest kids, maybe 7 to 12-year-old kids.
Yeah.
They can relate to it because this is how they talk to each other on the football field or playground. They talk a little smack, but they also look out for each other, and they have this little group of friends that are connected, and they call themselves the Goonies. Mm-hmm. And they actually, in the original script, had a whole oath that the Goonies said to each other end up getting cut from the film. And they're a very tight group that want to go on this adventure. And in the plot of the film, the town is being bought up by a
country club. They want to build a country club. And they got to get rid of all the houses and the Goondocks.
Right. So they're trying to buy up these movies and or these movies, these houses. And because the people can't afford to keep the house anyway, because there's no real explanation of that. I guess the economy in the town's not good.
Or maybe they're just raising the property taxes.
Right. Yeah. It's like, why are they forcing these people out to try to buy their properties? It's kind of a weird plot device.
Yeah.
So the kids want to have one last adventure together before they're all separated and have to move away. And they find this treasure map on this picture frame up in the attic of their dad's stuff, who had all this kind of just things he had collected.
Yeah, it's kind of like going upstairs and finding a Spencer's Gifts and more in your attic. There's just a little bit of everything on there, and they happen to find the gold doubloon and the newspaper clipping of Copper Pot and the map, and they're like, oh, you know, this is what we're gonna do.
Yeah. Because they remember growing up there, they had heard these stories about a supposedly hidden pirate treasure in the area of Astoria, which is where they live. So they decide, well, let's do this. And I guess the one character is played by Sean Austin, Mikey. He's got bad asthma and hay fever.
Yeah.
And he's not really supposed to go outside. And this town is really dreary. It's off the water. And it's misty and rainy. And I'm thinking, too, like, as you watch this as an adult, you realize, like, if this kid has bad asthma and hay fever problems, why are you living right here where all this moisture's in the air?
There's one part section of the film where he takes like 3 hits of that asthma thing in the same 5 minutes, and you're like, man, it must be pretty pretty moist.
Yeah,
in the
it's
air.
Like, wouldn't you want to move away anywhere where the weather is a little better and a little cleaner? It's like, it doesn't look like exactly a good town to live in if this kid's got problems, you know. And so they go on this adventure, and this is the part where the film does drag a little bit right here, as you're waiting for them to get to the fun stuff, and there's this whole scene where they go to, like, this restaurant, which is, there's these criminals, Fratellis, that are on the run, and they're escaped, and there's a little scene at the beginning where the cops are chasing them, mm-hmm. and the kids just think that's cool. They're like, oh, they're excited to see cop cars.
Chase.
They don't realize that these are bad people, and the bad people are hung out in this restaurant. And they come across them, and then the next thing you know, the Fratellis actually at this point are going to let them go. But they're kids. They're curious. So they go back in there because they want to know what's going on because a treasure map leads them there, and they end up finding this cavern below the restaurant and all that. And then the one kid gets captured by the Fratellis, Chunk. And they have a brother, the Fratellis, that they keep locked up because he's deformed. And that's, of course, Lost character. And this is where the adventure begins.
Yes. And so there's booby traps. It's funny. It's like they took a page out of the Temple of Doom. So like, because Quan is in the film, you have to have boulders falling on people. Right. And you know, they're interrogating Chunk while this is all going on. And it's funny, some of the stuff that Chunk is confessing is actually some stuff that Steven Spielberg did as a kid. The whole barf thing, that was Steven Spielberg, where he made the fake barf and poured it over the balcony. And he's just like, it's funny because they just keep listening to Chunk. He's like, I stole my Uncle Max's toupee, and I threw it and I fed it to the dog or whatever like that, and telling him all these crazy things, and they're just smiling, listening to him, and not asking, you know, more about, you know, why they're there. He's just letting them talk, and so I guess they believe him, and they lock him in the room with Sloth, and he's saved by the bats coming out of the cavern, and they lock him with Sloth, and Sloth turns out to be just a big kid.
Yeah.
Really, yeah.
And then the adventure unfolds as they continue to go through this, like you said, a very Temple of Doom-ish kind of adventure where they're looking for this pirate ship and everything and this treasure, and they go through all these different booby traps and mazes, and I think the piano scene was really cool. Piano made of bones. And from that point on, though, I think there needs no explanation. People have seen the Goonies. They know what happens. They eventually find this pirate ship, and they discover it, and they find One Eye Willie's gold. And another thing I notice as I'm older watching this film, like I remember as a kid, you kind of go on this adventure, you connect yourself with Mikey because he really... he believes in the adventure of it, and he believes in One-Eye Willie and what he did, and he wants to be a part of it. And there's a moment at the end where he finds One-Eye Willie, and he's like talking to him, and he's like, "Oh, I made it." And as an adult, I realized like that. It's like, where did this connection come from?
Yeah.
As a kid, I never noticed that, but as an adult watching this movie, it's been some years since I watched The Goonies. I'm like, at first he didn't give a rat's ass, and all of a sudden he has this connection with One-Eye Willie. It's like, why? And it's kind of strange. Yeah,
and then he's pronounced like the first Goonie, and so they leave a good chunk of the treasure there with him, you know, because they want to commemorate, you know, him. And it's like, yeah, you're right. There's this bond that just automatically sort of is formed. Yeah. And whenever, you know, whenever they see it, and then, of course, you know, the Fratelli show up, which Fratelli in Italian means brothers, so it's like saying brothers, if you translate it. So the Fratelli brothers, they show up, and they basically strip them of all their treasure,
right.
And they tie up the girl's hand, they tie up Alex's hands. That's whenever we have one of the most iconic scenes, Sloth showing up.
Right, with Chunk.
And the Superman theme.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, you guys!
And he ropes down and everything, and he saves them. And it's funny because, like, watching the action scenes in this, the Fratellis are supposed to be like these bad bank robbers, but they're not like, you can tell there's no real danger to the kids.
Yeah.
They're not really going to kill the kids. They're not really going to punch them. And the action scenes aren't real well shot.
No.
They're kind of funky. You can tell the punches are fake and stuff. And, But it works because they are kids. It makes it have a sense of adventure.
And you know what I was about to say? I was thinking this in my head. I was like, you know, it kind of reminds you of Kevin fighting the Home Alone bad guys. And right. Then it clicked. Chris Columbus directed Home Alone.
Yeah.
So it only makes sense that the Fratelli brothers have the same, like, aggressive, you know, punching in, you know, habits as the as the Fratelli brothers. So the very goofy action, you know, you don't feel like... They're gonna, you know, they're in any danger. All that's missing is, you know, one of the brothers saying, "Oh, right in the schnoz," and some kind of banter like that.
And it shows the talents of Richard Donner as a director, because a guy who made Superman the movie and arguably directed most of Superman 2, who was a very adult level superhero film, and then he made this, which was for kids, and he went on to make Lethal Weapon, which is a very adult rated R film.
Oh yeah.
And it just shows you the talent of Richard Donner as a director.
He made Lady Hawk that year too.
Yeah.
And Lady Hawk has been a cult classic, and there's been talks of a remake of Lady Hawk, just among forums, not like anything serious, but that's a film that I probably need to re-see, because my uncle has a copy of Lady Hawk. Or he had one. I don't know if he has it anymore.
And Spielberg, as a producer, has worked with kids in many of his films. Temple of Doom. Close Encounters of the Third Kind, E.T. So working with children is nothing new for Spielberg at this point in his career in the 80s as a producer. And Spielberg at this time with Amblin Entertainment was a very hands-on producer. He wasn't just a producer by name. He was on set for most of the filming. The film only shot over like 50 days. It wasn't a long shoot, and Spielberg was there with the kids and helping them. In fact, they would play pranks on Richard Donner quite often.
Oh, yeah.
And it was all Spielberg instigating
that. Yeah, I saw that, and they pretty much ignored him and acted
like the last couple weeks of shooting.
Yeah, yeah, like they were just really scolding faces towards him and stuff, and then he comes back after they filmed, and they throw him a big old barbecue and clue him in on, you know, everything that they've been doing is just a big joke.
And then some other neat things. This was Josh Brolin's film debut, who,
yes,
of course, now is going on. He plays Thanos in Infinity War and Cable in Deadpool 2.
Yeah.
And is going to have a really great career. And this was his first role, though. And he's actually pretty good in it.
Yeah, he is.
He kind of helps lead the kids in a lot of ways as being the older brother of Mikey. And he is kind of he's the older brother that picks on his little brother, but he also is really looking out for all the boys and making sure they're safe.
Yeah, that's why he came out there. And, you know, he's been in Men in Black 3 now. I think his career blossomed afterwards. You know, you had people like Feldman, who was in
went on to be in The Lost Boys.
Friday the 13th 3.
Yeah, did several films with Corey Haim, his buddy.
And then Chunk, he was on television for a little bit, and then he started his own law firm. Yeah. He went a completely different route than anybody else. And then it seems like Josh Brolin is just, you know, maybe over the past 5 years has come into a bigger actor.
Right. And Sean Austin went on to have a career. He did a lot. He did Rudy. And he became kind of a character actor over the years. And, of course, Lord of the Rings was highly successful playing Samwise. Mm-hmm. And most recently, he was in Stranger Things Season 2, which was kind of a callback because he was in a lot of 80s films. And Stranger Things obviously takes place in the 80s.
Had to have
him in there. So they brought in Sean Austin, which was, again, a callback to these movies he did. So a good cast. The kids are really good in this. I'll give them a lot of credit. Oh, yeah. That's one thing I did notice when I was watching. I was like, man, they really do a good job. And Spielberg made sure the kids hung out together on set. He had them get to know each other. He wanted them to have a feeling that they were all buddies.
And it's, you know, a lot of movies that were made in that era that had a lot of kids in them, sometimes the kids, you know, just couldn't act. And in this film, they do come together, probably because, you know, credit to Spielberg. Spielberg made sure that, you know, they were comfortable around each other and they could play off of each other. And you can definitely see that in the filming, especially in some of the earlier scenes whenever they break the statue and then the penis is going up.
Yes, Michael laughed at that quite a bit. He thought that was the funniest scene in the movie.
For me, it was like, I mean, I think my favorite scene is the translation. It's like, first, how did the mom, you know, hire a only Spanish-speaking woman whenever she can't speak Spanish?
If they have no money to save their house, but you're going to hire a maid? It's like, what?
Yeah.
I thought that was weird.
And then Corey Feldman's character, he's like, keep the cocaine and the heroin separate.
Separate all the drugs. Yeah.
And then he's like, if you don't do a good job, I'm going to lock you in the closet and stuff like that. And she's like, oh, these people are crazy.
Yeah, it's funny, but it doesn't make sense, but it's funny.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense, but it's funny.
And some of these movies, like The Goonies, and are forgiven for those things because these movies were made at a time where the 80s is an interesting era for movies. You had a lot of really great films, a lot of mid-level films, a lot of like just kind of bad films that have become cult classics, you know. And I wouldn't say this is a bad film. I would put this a mid-level film. It still holds up pretty well today. You just notice the plot devices now as you're older, like, well, that doesn't make sense, or why has this happened?
Yeah.
But yet you forgive it because they're movies we grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and is that, you know,
they're films that require true believers.
Yeah.
You know, we bring up true believers and you know, believing in something being an absolute. And this is one of those films, you know, just like a lot of 80s action films. I mean, you know, how bad would Commando come under fire if Commando was made now? All of a sudden, you know, John Matrix is some, you know, badass that you don't know anything about. You know, if you compared it to John Wick, it's like John Wick would be a whole better movie than Commando would have been today. But, you know, it's like you said, it's the era, and we love that era for being what it is. And, you know, we grew up with it. So they're always going to get a pass, because the 80s is the 80s. It's its own genre, yeah, pretty much.
And, you know, what's cool is this movie also, one thing I love about 80s films is before the CGI era. So there's a lot of practical effects, and they actually built the ship. It was 150 feet long. Everything in it worked.
Yeah.
All the pirate stuff, they actually built it. They used real bones for One Eye Willie's head.
That's right.
And stuff like that, which Richard Donner kept. He still has. And so the only thing that's fake in it all is the matte paintings in the background, because it was filmed on a soundstage,
okay,
with the water and stuff, but they use matte paintings. And so it's all real, and that's what makes it work in so many ways, too. And it's funny, whenever they were done filming, they didn't know what to do with the ship, and they were going to donate it to anybody who wanted it, and nobody wanted it.
Yeah.
So eventually, parts of it were donated to Disney. Disney ended up using it because they were renovating the Pirates of the Caribbean ride. So they ended up using some of the ship to renovate their ship for their ride.
Oh, that's neat.
Because they had no idea what to do with this huge, massive ship they built, and they didn't want to destroy it because it was so cool.
Yeah, I know they tried to sell it to Universal, mm-hmm, and Universal didn't want it, and so that's cool that Disney was able to make use out of it. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and then another neat thing, there's a apparent uncut version of this out there that's never really been released. It's been on aired on TV once, and that's why at the end, when Data says, "Oh, well, the octopus was scary," there apparently was a whole scene where, yeah, the octopus,
and he shoves and, a Walkman in the
right,
the octopus's face.
And yeah, and but I've never seen that version.
Yeah,
and I guess it still airs every now and then, but I don't know where. And it, and I guess on the 25th anniversary Blu-ray, their scene is on there, but that Blu-ray's out of print already, yeah, even though it's only a few years old, so it's really expensive. And and apparently that's out there with a couple of scenes. I think there was another scene I read somewhere that was cut from the film, too.
Yeah, they cut a part of the film that explained the origin of One-Eyed Willie. So One-Eyed Willie was apparently like a court jester to some king, probably King Louis or King George. And then he became a pirate, and he brought other like misfit king's servants to his cause, and they became a big pirate ship, started looting king ships. But then they were surrounded by about three of the king's war boats, and he took off towards this cavern. And while he was fleeing into this cavern, the ships fired cannonballs, locking him in. And so he set up the booby traps in case any of his men tried to escape the cavern, yeah, to keep them in and keep the secret safe.
I mean, cool. Maybe one day I'm going to hopefully I can find a copy. I would love to see the cut stuff.
Yeah.
And apparently the version is out there where that stuff's back in it, but I guess it's never officially been released to the public except as cut scenes on, yeah, the Blu-rays, apparently.
You can find them on YouTube. Actually, the octopus doesn't look that bad.
Really?
But it's just weird that he shoves a Walkman into this thing's face.
Is it kind of?
And then he takes off.
It's kind of weird because right now there's a lot going on in society about diversity and different things. And you know, and Crazy Rich Asians is doing very well at the box office, yeah, right now. To give and everything that's happened with Kelly Marie Tran from The Last Jedi, and Asians giving their due in cinema. And it's funny because this movie was made in the mid '80s, and they really did make Data your prototype. He's smart. He's like an inventor.
All the gadgets.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, that's not stereotypical at all, you know?
But
and if you did that now, it'd be like, oh, why is the Asian guy got to be the smart guy? You
I know, right? It's like, it's funny, like, kind of like, you know, well, there's that. I forgot where I was going to go with that. But I do think his belt buckle's really cool.
Yeah, he's to a 007. Cool character.
I mean,
they even put the Bond theme in the movie.
Yeah, when he's swinging in, he goes through the door, and they're like, oh, Data must be here. And, you know, he's a really cool character, and I really like him. He probably helped build the gate,
right,
the thing that opens the gate, which is funny because the gate is dependent on the chicken laying an egg, and a chicken can only lay an egg once a day.
Right.
So that trick would only work once.
I thought that until I was watching it. I'm like, that egg's not going to shoot out every time. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, and all the kids are really good in this, and they're good characters. Even Carrie Feldman, because this is pre-druggy Corey Feldman.
Yeah.
Corey Feldman.
Corey Feldman.
And, you know, so, and they all do a good job, and Chunk and everybody, and I think that's why this movie works so much, is the kids are so, they're believable in it, and they're really good. Without them, it wouldn't work.
No.
And that's why, in some ways, there's been a lot of talks about a sequel to this happening for many years now, and apparently it's still in pre-development that it may happen, but I just... you bring in an older Sean Austin, you can't do it with him as dads. You would have to do it with their sons or something.
Yeah.
I just don't. I think this is one of those movies that doesn't need a legacy sequel. I think leave it alone. It works for what it is, and you can't capture that 80s magic or that sense of adventure again. I just don't. I don't see it happening, you know?
Yeah. And a lot of people were hyped up about a sequel because a lot of the reason because, you know, not just because of the popularity, but Konami released a video game. And then they released another video game that was also released in the U.S. The first one was only released in Japan, and it was labeled Goonies 2. And so people were like, "Whoa, Goonies 2!" And so it brought up a lot of buzz about a sequel that, of course, never happened. But yeah, you'd have to use the parents.
Yeah,
I don't think you could do this via Stephen King's It. You know, and bring the adults back for another, you know, adventure. Although, I wouldn't oppose it, but I don't think it would be the right way to do it.
Right. Yeah, it would have to have a really, really great script and really... you'd almost have to bring Donner or Spielberg back.
Yeah.
And I know Donner has said that he would come back and to do it, but it would have to be really feel right because, unfortunately, some of these legacy sequels we've gotten for every Blade Runner 2049... there's a Tron Legacy that's not as good, you know, with these movies for 20, 30 years old. So you really want it to be, and I actually did enjoy Tron Legacy, but I can be honest, it's not that great either.
Yeah.
I like it mostly for the special effects and some of the Tron scenes. Those are cool, so we'll see if Goonies, but how do you feel Goonies holds up today?
I think it still holds up pretty good. I mean, like, it obvious, you know, versus today's films, it does take a little bit to kind of get going at front, up first, and then, you know, that might take some people away and maybe put some people off. But overall, it's a good film. Yeah. It holds up pretty well. I hadn't seen this since I was a kid.
Yeah, I didn't watch it in a while either.
Yeah, I had, rewatching it, you know, I just really love Sloth's character this time around.
Yeah.
I think he's hilarious, just him being a big kid. And his, you know, quick friendship with Chunk.
Yeah.
And then the Superman scene at the end, he rips off his shirts and they're like, "Oh no, we're in trouble now."
Yeah. No, it's a very enjoyable movie. It's something you can watch with the family and you can sit back and just takes you back to a simpler, easier time of innocence and adventure. And a really good and it's something that I think generations to come will enjoy this film because I think it does hold up well enough to stand the test of time. And it may not be perfect, but that's what gives it its charm, I think, is that it has that sense of adventure and sense of family film to it. And something that people will keep watching for years. If they do a sequel, great. Let's just hope it comes out good.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
but at the same time, I'm like, if they leave it alone, that's fine too. And, you know, as I was watching it, it got me thinking about, like, it could have really maybe worked as an animated series, you know, like, because it kind of gave you that sense of Saturday morning adventures and growing up watching Saturday morning cartoons and things like that. And so I had an idea of adding to this things that we grew up watching, Saturday morning cartoons. I was watching on Facebook, there's a page called the 80s page, and on Saturday mornings, they live stream 80s or Saturday morning cartoons.
That's awesome.
Trying to bring them back. And it got me thinking of the cartoon era, and now our children have access to cartoons 24 hours a day between the Cartoon Network and Boomerang and Netflix and Hulu and everything else that's at their fingertips. But are you old enough to kind of still remember Saturday morning cartoons
before
we had all that? What was some stuff you grew up watching and really enjoyed?
The Real Ghostbusters. I really liked The Real Ghostbusters, the animated one with where Slimer was like a sidekick. And they, of course, rebooted it in the late 90s, early 2000s with Egon being a professor, but it wasn't as good. But that was I thought that was a really fun series. In fact, my son likes watching it, and he'll pull up episodes on YouTube just out of the blue.
Well, it's on Netflix too, The Real Ghostbusters.
Really?
You know that? Yeah. Yeah, Wyatt likes watching it.
That's funny.
Yeah, he likes it. Yeah, for me, I mean, being an 80s, 90s kid, it was the usual Transformers and G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
And He-Man, of course.
Oh, yeah,
talking He-Man. About Power of Grayskull. I remember a show called MASK, which was an acronym for something, where they had, like, these devices and these cars and stuff, and that was a really cool one. And there was a weird one, I think it was called Turbo Kid, where a kid, like literally transforms into like a car. He turns from a child into a car. It's really weird.
Was he? Did he have black and white clothing?
I think it was like red and white.
Red and white.
It was really bizarre and weird.
I think I know what you're talking about.
And I remember there's one on Amazon Prime. I was actually had one this morning, Defenders of the Earth, which was like Flash Gordon and the Phantom and all these characters. And they come together to like, it's just basic stories, fighting Ming, the Merciless, and bad guys every episode. And again, a lot of those cartoons back then were really simple. You had Skeletor or Megatron had a plot.
Yeah.
They're always trying to take something over. And there came an Optimus Prime or He-Man or Duke from G.I. Joe to stop Cobra. And every episode, they would save the world.
Yes.
You know, and now you put these cartoons on now, and they're very, like, just kind of weird.
Yeah.
Like, I was talking to my oldest the other day, like, I don't understand Adventure Time and these shows. It's like they almost try to make them purposely bizarre and weird to keep the kids' attentions.
It's like, let's take Johnny Quest and turn it into something just fucked up and on LSD.
Yeah, instead of just keeping it simple and not so bizarre. You know, and that's why I felt like the Goonies could have worked as an animated cartoon. Just every episode, these kids could have gone on an adventure, and they solved the adventure every episode. You know? It would have worked. Any other thoughts on Saturday morning cartoons that you remember?
Oh, Ninja Turtles.
Oh, hell yeah.
Batman Beyond, Batman the Animated Series.
I was in high school already when Batman the Animated Series came out, but I would come home and watch it because I love Batman so much.
Mm-hmm. Spider-Man was on most of the time after school.
Yeah, because
there was always
about
a Saturday episode.
In the early 90s is about when they started the after school cartoons.
Yes.
They had some in the 80s, but the 90s was really big for that because they had X-Men and Spider-Man and Batman and Looney Tunes in the afternoon like that. And
Freakazoid. You remember Freakazoid?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and then Wacko,
and then it's
Animaniacs.
And then it's about the time where I was going to say, like, Nickelodeon started coming around and being real popular, and they would have, like, a lot of cartoons in the afternoon, like the Animaniacs and stuff.
Yeah.
Because this was before Warner Brothers had Cartoon Network, so they would put a lot of stuff on Nickelodeon back then.
Yeah, and because of them, every time I see a nurse that is attractive, I say, "Hello, nurse."
And Pinky and the Brain?
Yes, Pinky and the Brain.
That was an afternoon cartoon.
God, Brain. It took me forever to realize that Narf was fart backwards.
And then your life changed forever.
Yes. And I'm like, he was saying fart backwards the whole time. I was like, why didn't I ever think of that as a kid? Matt, quit saying fart. And you're like, okay. Narf. Or no, trough. Trough. Sorry. Trough. It's fart backwards.
It works either way.
And then it's funny because I don't think that cartoon would work today. The brand, you know, same thing we do every night, Pinky.
Well, they've been talking about rebooting that, but what is it being rebooted right now? It's like everything old they're trying to reboot now.
Isn't they trying to reboot Ren and Stimpy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's been rumors. There's another new Ninja Turtles cartoon on Rise of the Ninja Turtles, which is weird. Leonardo's not even the leader. I'm like, how does this dynamic work? Leonardo's always a leader.
I think they need to, you know, there was a Ninja Turtle animated series that they had going on in the early 2000s that, you know, where they, you know, they took it into a different direction that I felt wasn't bad. You know, it was like an intergalactic tournament, stuff like that to save your universe and stuff like that. And they had Splinter in it, and Splinter fought, and I thought that was really cool. But now it's like the animation, it's just really weird.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, let's make everyone look like weird rectangles. And
well, and then the Nickelodeon one that just aired before this, the CGI one, was really good for a while.
Yeah.
And it started doing that, getting really weird and like interdimensional. And it started okay. But, you know, everything they feel they have to reboot, like, you know, She-Ra is fixing to get rebooted on Netflix. Yeah. And which I'm kind of hoping that leads to maybe a He-Man reboot on Netflix. That'd be kind of cool, you know?
I'd like to see a Street Sharks reboot.
Street Sharks.
I love Street Sharks. They're surfer dudes, but they're also sharks, man.
And I still, and I think I've said this on the show before, I still want a Generation 1 Transformers reboot.
Oh, yeah.
With the classic Transformers. They keep doing all these other versions of Transformers over the year, but let's just go back to the basics and bring back the originals in a new cartoon with better storytelling, better animation. That would be really cool. They tried rebooting G.I. Joe with the G.I. Joe Renegades and stuff, but it still has never taken off like the original did.
No, it's not the same.
But we need a trend. And we have had a He-Man reboot with the one from the 2000s.
Yeah, I like the 2000s
one. Which was really good.
And I like the toys, too, that came out with that. There's some badass toys.
But Transformers is one that it just feels like Transformers is so popular, especially with the Michael Bay movies. Whether you love them or hate them, they made a ton of money.
Yeah, they did.
It just feels like that's ripe for a Generation 1 cartoon reboot. And why they haven't done it yet is beyond me. They want to keep doing this Prime or Beast Hunters or whatever that's called. You know, there's so many Transformers.
I remember Beast Hunters.
but where is Generation 1? Just go back to the basics. You know, it's like, come on, let's do it. It needs to happen eventually.
Yeah.
I mean, we got a Voltron reboot from DreamWorks on Netflix,
man,
which is really good. Where is that Transformers reboot?
You have a point.
So maybe it'll happen one day. So we got some news briefs to talk about. Man, we talked about last week that the rumors of Idris Elba taking over Bond when Daniel Craig is done. Now, more Bond news this week. Danny Boyle has stepped off from directing. He's backed off. He's not doing Bond 25, as it's called right now. And production was supposed to start in November because it's going to come out next year.
Yeah.
No official word that the film is delayed because it's only August, so it's enough time to find a director. But kind of disappointing. You know, Danny Boyle, for people who don't know, made 28 Days Later, The Beach, Slumdog Millionaire. He's made some very good films. And I really think his style would have been really cool for Bond. And I was looking forward to him doing a James Bond film. But where do we go from here? There's been some talks. Christopher Nolan has said many times he wants to do a Bond film, and he's not really working on anything at the moment. Ideally, if I could pick anyone, I would pick Christopher Nolan.
Dude, second that would to do be James really Bond. Cool.
I think that'd be awesome. Maybe bring Sam Mendes back. But Spectre wasn't as well received as Skyfall, so do they want him back? You know, who knows? So what do you think about Danny Boyle backing out?
That's just really weird that we're so close to production and he just backs out.
Well, they say it was creative differences, and it could be.
Because
Boyle is very much a director that's always done his own thing, kind of independent films and stuff. And the producers of the Bond films are very, you know, it's Bond. They own it. They want what they want. And I could see maybe he didn't want to agree to their terms.
Is this like a storyline that was pre-written, or is this a...
as far as I know, they've used all the novels, so everything's new now. Oh, okay. As far as Bond goes, I think they're out of novels by now. Yeah, so I think they were like, I think going back since I think Quantum of Solace was the last one that was based on a novel. I think it's all original from here on out.
Okay.
Yeah,
well then, yeah, maybe it was creative differences. Studio just wanted Bond, the storyline to go one way, and maybe Boyle, you know, had an idea that, you know, they didn't want, you know, to do. I mean, let's look at John Woo, you know, we did a movie on John Woo, Hard Boiled, a few weeks ago, and, you know, Hollywood, you know, is probably the blame for, you know, the John Woo films that he made in Hollywood not being exactly how the Woo films were in, you know, across the seas.
It's funny, I didn't have this in my news briefs, but that's a good lead into something I read yesterday. I was reading an article with an interview with Woo. It's the 25th anniversary of Hard Target, first American film. And I didn't realize he's in pre-production. They've been trying to remake The Killer for several years now. Even as early as like 3 years ago, there were rumors that Chris Hemsworth was going to play the assassin.
Oh, wow.
Apparently, Woo is doing it. And he's going to direct the film, and it's going to be a female. Lupita Nyong'o is going to play the killer and be the assassin. And he was talking in the interview about how it's different perspective going from a male assassin to a female assassin and remaking his own film. He says that's the whole thing, because you want to make it kind of new and fresh, but yet you want to keep it true to what the original film was. So Woo is coming back, and he hasn't done an American film since Paycheck, and he's coming back and doing this film for American audiences. And I'm okay with that, strange. I think The Killer doesn't need to be remade, but who better to remake their film than the guy who made the original?
Yeah, and why not, while they're at it, why not put Chow Yun-Fat playing the clarinet?
At least have a cameo in
the opening scene, and then she shoots the revolver while he's right next to the cylinder.
Make him blind instead. That would be interesting, because The Killer is a great movie. So we'll see.
Very iconic too. I mean, every time you see a black suit and a black dress shirt with a red tie, I mean, you're like, hey man, are you some kind of mafia dude or something?
So I'm just glad that Woo's coming back and doing the film, and I think it would be exciting. And since it's Lupita Nyong'o was in it, this leads into our next news brief. She was in the Black Panther, and Marvel is saying they're going to go out and strongly pursue Black Panther for Oscars. Interesting, because this doesn't happen real often with genre films.
Yeah.
You know, The Dark Knight, of course, was an exception. Mad Max got a lot of Oscars a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. We just talked about Christopher Nolan. Inception was nominated for Best Picture and had Oscar nominations. So they're going to heavily pursue an Oscar campaign for Black Panther, even with this new category of outstanding achievement in popular film, which is kind of bizarre. It's like they're trying to be like MTV. Why not? I do think Black Panther was very good. I can see Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah.
He was so good in it.
Yeah, Michael
giving
B.
him a nomination for Best Supporting Actor. The thing about this movie is the cast overall was so good. It's hard to single anyone out. As far as best film, it's really good, but I don't know if it's an Oscar level worthy film, because they're, at the end of the day, they are comic book movies.
Yeah.
And they don't quite transcend that, what people look for in a best picture. But at the same time, maybe it's time to start changing the way we look at award shows and things like that.
That's
and
fair.
Give other films a chance, because not everyone wants to go watch a depressing World War II movie or a depressing movie about people that fell in love and fell out of love, you know? So, and may, if it's what they have to take to get people interested in movies and keep things excited to go into theaters, maybe the Oscars do need to grow up and look at things differently.
Yeah, I think that's correct, because, I mean, who's leading the box office?
Right.
You know, it's
superhero
films.
The top 10 films every year are genre films. Yeah.
So I think it is time for a change, and it's time to see some superhero movies or even some sci-fi movies make it.
And not win just special effects and things like that. Yeah.
Or makeup.
Right. Because, I mean, yeah, no. So we'll see. And then the last bit of news, Guardians 3 has now been delayed indefinitely over the whole James Gunn controversy. They told the workers that are working on the film pre-production they can pursue other jobs. And this isn't really, like, going to hurt Guardians, because Marvel never officially released a release date anyway.
Yeah.
But it just makes you wonder if they're going to, when you hear this happens, they say they're going to use James Gunn's script so the continuity stays there. But at the same time, when they delay things, a new director may come in and want to start from scratch.
Yeah. And then on top of that, you know, there's always the question if, are these people going to get recast?
Right.
Because
Bautista, we know, is not happy. None of them are really happy.
No,
Bautista's just been the most vocal about it. You know, so will Guardians 3 even happen? You know, I think it will, but it just makes you wonder. This could be, you know, Marvel's been very, very successful so far, and they are treading ground here that this could be their first movie that gets some backlash if it's not done the right way, and especially if you don't use gun script, I can see people maybe starting to lose some interest.
Yeah,
this is a very, because there's been a lot of heavy support for Gunn over the internet and through other actors that said, "Hey, you should have hired him back. He was apologized. You should forgive him."
Yeah, and then he had to apologize. He apologized for this the second time. You know, he had to apologize for it when he first got hired on. So it doesn't make sense. Feels like, you know, I know this is acting outside of the law. This is, you know, the social world, but it feels a little bit like double jeopardy to me.
Right.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. So that's all the news we got. Let's talk about, we always preview our next movie we're going to do, and we've had some requests from some friends of ours, like, hey, you should do a comedy or something. And,
yeah.
And we're like, well, we don't really do comedies, and we did Dogma, which is kind of a comedy.
Yeah.
But then you had the idea of, like, why not a Monty Python movie?
Heck yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, it could work, because it's kind of cross-genre, so we're going to do the ultra-popular and famous Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Once in a lifetime, there comes a motion picture which changes the whole history of motion pictures. A picture so stunning in its effect, so vast in its impact, that it profoundly affects the lives of all who see it. One such film is...
Very good, thank you. Yes, thank you. Next, please.
Once in a lifetime, there comes a motion picture which changes the whole history of motion pictures.
Yes, thank you. Next.
Once in a lifetime!
Go away.
What?
Next.
What's wrong with my voice? My voice is all right, my brain is wrong.
有时候, 有一部电影可以把整个电影的历史起来改变.
That's more like it.
库鲁萨瓦的 Seven Samurai 就是这样的一部电影. 还有 Ivan the Terrible. 其余的都是平常的电影. 像 Herbie Rides Again, La Notte 和 Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Monty Python and the Holy Grail 有许多滑稽的.
If you do not open this door, we shall take this castle by force.
When night's around the table, we dance where we're able. We do routines to call a scene.
故事紧张.
Ah-ha! blood, all this will be yours.
What, the curtains?
Run away!
还有一些不花许多钱的危险账面。
What makes you think she's a witch?
Well, she turned me into a newt!
但是和The Seven Seal来比一下。 这部电影就非常幼稚。
No!
所以如果您是一个知识界技的小家伙, 您也喜欢傻笑什么事, 也不能更糟。 Monty Python and the Holy Grail. 看完了，来这里吃便饭。
And this is a movie I'm honestly not as familiar with. You've stumped me on this one. I know who Monty Python is, and I've seen parts of the movie, but I can't tell you when was the last time I watched the whole thing. I was probably little and probably watched it. My dad probably had it on. Everyone knows the famous That's a Flesh Wound scene.
Yeah.
So this will be one for me that, you kind of got me on. It's like, and I've seen Monty Python sketches and skits on TV and things like that. I know who they are, and I do know they're really funny, but as far as their films, I'm maybe not super familiar with them.
Yeah, that's actually how I came across it. My dad was watching it on TV, and I just happened to start watching it, and I thought it was goofy as heck, and I ended up liking it. It's very quotable. I mean, your mother was a hamster, and your father smelt of elderberry. You know, some weird humor in there that definitely works, and it still holds up today. Gonna have a lot of fun talking about this one.
So it's that strange British humor at times too.
Yes. Thor skin.
So, yeah. Alex and Jimmy and Tom Bruno over there at the Thor Skin podcast. Like,
yes.
I might even try to get Alex on the show for this one.
Yes.
I even sent him a message like, I'm like, that's not too British, is it, to ask you to come talk about a British film? He just laughed, you know. So it should be a fun one. It's on Amazon Prime right now, for anybody who doesn't know. So if you want to watch it before we talk about it next week, go on your Amazon Prime. It's available to watch and check it out with us so we can talk about it next week on the show.
Yes.
Monty Python, The Holy Grail, which was directed by Terry Gilliam. They kind of directed those movies as a group.
Yeah.
Those guys, if I remember right. And that's how they did things back then. They all worked together, that comedy troupe, and they did things together, and they direct a lot of the films together. So it should be a fun movie to talk about. And next week on the Rebel Radio podcast. And that's all I've got.
Yeah, that's all I've got.
And for anybody listening on WBLZ Media on Ironic Radio, if you're listening to the radio stream, we always do a classic episode at the 3 o'clock hour right after you hear this new one. And this week's classic episode is an episode that has never been heard before. So stay tuned for that here in a few minutes if you're listening on the radio stream. And for anyone else on the podcast, thank you as always for listening. Go to therebelradiopodcast.com. We got t-shirts for sale. All the episodes are there on the archives. And check it out. And Comics with Arnold, there is a new episode will be out this week, which
yes.
has already been sent to me. I just got to get it up and uploaded. It might even be out before this episode is released. And so check that out. It's very funny on our YouTube channel. And as always, thanks for listening. And we're looking forward to the Fandemic Tour in a few weeks and bringing that to you. And that's all.
That's all for today.
This has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
As always, just go there
and do it.
Hello, everybody. This is Ming Chen from AMC's Comic Book Men.
And this is Mike Zabzik from The Same, and you're listening to...
Rebel Radio.
Hey, you're listening to Rebel Radio Podcast, and this is Jay Muse. Snooch to the nooch. Go there and do it.
This is Chuck Huber. You're listening to the Rebel Radio Podcast. Stop being so awesome.